We're talking with Marion Williams, co-author of the new book, It's a Metaphysical World, and I've asked her to stick around for a little while longer to take some of your questions and comments. We'll keep her at least till the bottom of the hour, and then we'll have open lines. Stay with us, everyone. I'm George Knapp, and tonight for George Norrie, this is Coast to Coast. Marion Williams, one other question before we go to the phones. You mentioned earlier about remote viewers and some of the doors of perception that opened up for them. I remember reading about some of the very best remote viewers working for the military, trained by the CIA, who report encounters with what we would call aliens. And I wonder what how aliens fit into your pantheon of creatures and entities. Do you see them as people like us just living on other planets? Are they from other dimensions? Good, bad, all of the above? What do you think?
Not sure what to think. I'm not really sure what UFOs are. I know they are out there. My husband's seen them. But as to who's piloting them, I'm not sure. Until we capture one or find one, I don't know that any of us knows. We have a alien investigator in this area here in Sudbury, and he has a website. And he believes that they come in various ranges of size, like small gray ones and tall, lean ones. And Elena knows of a person who has seen them, but we haven't sat down to interview them fully on this yet and to form our own opinion on it. All
Okay.
I know is there are UFOs, but I'm just not sure about the aliens.
Okay, fair enough. West of the Rockies, Bonnie calling from Maui. And Bonnie, we already hold that against you that you're in Maui and we're not. But go ahead and ask a question for Marion.
Hi,
Hi.
it's Bonnie with a V.
Oh, okay.
Hi, Marion. Hi, it's so nice to talk to you. I have been haunted, literally haunted, for so many years. We're talking about angels, guardian angels. I was in my car in 1977, before cell phones, obviously. And I was run off the road. I was 8 months pregnant, and I was run off the road by a driver who banged into the back of my car, got out of his car, and tried to bash in my windows, and jumped out of my car. I heard this voice instinctively, intuitively. I said, You've got to run. You've got to get out of your car. And so I started running across the road, and he grabbed me around my neck. And just out of the blue, as I said, this is before cell phones, a tow truck driver came upon us and saw him choking me in the middle of the road and literally saved my life. And that man was my guardian angel, I felt.
Yes, you're probably right. Well, there was some sort of intervention there, wasn't there? And especially when you heard a voice in your head telling you where to be so that he would actually see you. Because
Well,
otherwise, what might have
otherwise.
happened is that he might have driven by and never noticed.
Right. I thought about that later because if I hadn't got out of my car and tried to run across the road being pregnant, he probably would have thought that it was somebody trying to help me.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's always haunted me because I tried to find this person who was the tow truck driver for so many years and could not find him.
Got a question
And
to ask you. Was the tow truck driver a very pleasant looking individual?
well, what happened was I started running out of my car across the road, and the police came, okay, and the man who drove into me, grabbed me around my neck and tried to choke me, saw the tow truck driver, ran back to his car, and what I found out later was he tried to take off and rammed into some parked cars, and he was hurt and threw him out of his car. And I tried to find out who this man was that saved my life, because he actually saved my life, and we couldn't find him.
Even through the police reports, did you check with the 911?
No, there was. We went to the preliminary hearing.
Okay, yes.
That was the last time I saw him. It was just absolutely incredible. I went to the preliminary hearing, and the district attorney turned to me and said, "I want you to meet the man who saved your life and your baby's life." And I just collapsed and I started crying and I hugged him. And that was the last time I saw him, and I tried to find him. And there was no record of him after that.
Well, Vonnie, is he just a good Samaritan? Not to be an arch skeptic, but a good Samaritan, a person who did a good thing, or a figurative guardian angel, or literal? What do you say?
I believe he was a guardian angel, because sometime later, Oprah Winfrey was having a show on angels and people who did heroic things and so forth, and she sent her team out to try to find this man who saved my life and my baby's life, and they couldn't find him. Any record of this man, his name, or anything.
And that's typical of the stories that I've heard, that they just disappear.
Oh, he disappeared, yes.
Yeah. But they're there when you need them. You must have, in your head, called out for help.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I think that's what happens. We say, oh, God, help me out of this one. And help comes.
Well, Vonnie, do you remember his name, where he lived, any information? Maybe he's listening.
I know his name was Warren. They said his name was Warren. And that was my father's name, actually. My father passed away 2 years ago. But the man's name was Warren. And when I turned to this man, when the district attorney introduced me to him and said, I want you to meet the man that saved your life and your son's life, he was a very short black man. And this was 1977.
And where?
In Torrance, California.
All right. Well, Warren, a tow truck driver from Torrance, if you're listening, or if somebody out there recognizes somebody who fits the description, call us up and we'll hook the two of you up.
Okay.
Thanks for the story. Appreciate it. First-time caller, Tom in Chicago. Hi, Tom. Good evening.
Hi. How are you today?
Okay. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to ask your guest if what a holistic healing is, if there's a difference between that and a faith healing. I had an experience with my best friend many years ago where we went to a church with his grandparents who were very religious, and it had a bake sale. He had a whole bunch of the cookies, and my friend was very allergic to peanuts or pecans, whatever, any kind of nuts. He started having a very bad reaction. We didn't know at the time that cookies that we ate did have peanuts in them. His eyes were bulging. He couldn't breathe well. And we said that we had to get him to a hospital, and the grandmother said, give me 5 minutes of prayer. You're in the house of the Lord. And I said, and I couldn't believe it. I kept thinking, wow, they're not caring. But they were caring. She sat down in the pew, she prayed, and within 5 minutes, he was fine. I just couldn't believe it. And afterwards, I just, what did you pray? And she just said, all she said was, you are both loved. Is that a holistic healing, a faith healing? I don't know what that is.
I think that's a faith healing. I think that's a faith healing. Holistic healing, you see that in shamanic practices. You also see it in energy healing, like Reiki, therapeutic touch, any of those type healings. And there the practitioner has an intent to help, but they work with the energy fields around a person to bring them back into balance. And from there the person heals themselves. But a faith healing is an intervention by somebody where they actually conduct the healing rather than the person. It's a different procedure, and I honestly have never witnessed a faith healing. I've seen lots of holistic type healings, but faith healings I've yet to investigate. They sound absolutely fascinating. I believe they absolutely do happen because we live in a magnificent world with all sorts of possibilities. And I think that people like Edgar Cayce were able to tap into these remarkable, talents. He just knew what to do. He said he looked at the Akashic records and found out what was needed. But however it's achieved, I think that's a different sort of healing from holistic healing. Holistic healing, it addresses the spiritual, the physical, the emotional, and it's a four-part process where you address all parts of a person. But faith healing is where you go directly to God or Source and say, you do it, you know?
It was the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my life.
It sounds it. I envy you your experience.
Tom, thanks for sharing the story with us. So, Marion, you would say miracles do happen.
I absolutely believe miracles happen in everyday life. I do.
A lot of people on the phones. Wildcard line. David in Columbia, Missouri. David, you there?
Yes, sir.
What's on your mind?
Oh, I just had a couple of questions about the Ouija board and possessed buildings, you know, spirits, ghosts, whatnot. It's fascinating. It's driving my mind crazy because, frankly, I just can't understand that a piece of building can actually be possessed, whereas I can walk into a building that's even older than that and find a cottage cheese container and wonder if that's possessed. I mean, I don't understand it. I don't understand it. George, how you doing? First time caller, long time listener, man.
Well, we're glad to have you with us. That's a very fair question. Marion, any thoughts on that?
Not every building's possessed, that's for certain. There are just some that are. If they are, you're usually left in no doubt because things get thrown around the room or, you know, bizarre things happen. People get electric shocks when there's no reason to get electric shocks. Doors lock and you get, you know, locked in areas. There's absolutely no doubt when there is a haunting, but it's not all that common, I don't think. But what we do find is that there are memory imprints. And what happens is if there's been a traumatic event, say a child who's been extremely scared or maybe somebody has been in fear of their life for one reason or another, that fear can be imprinted on the walls as well. And it's not so much a haunting as a memory imprint, and that's more common. Like if you go into a home where the people have been divorced, you will often feel the tension coming out from the walls at you if you're at all sensitive to that sort of thing. Elena talks of looking for a new house and going with the realtor and being able to tell you exactly the history of everyone who had lived in the previous homes because it was imprinted on the walls. And you do find places, conversely, that feel absolutely wonderful, you know?
And what is it about these houses, though? I mean, it's not just that they're old. It's what's happened there.
It's what's happened there, yeah. It's what's happened there.
Thanks for the call. Sharon in Canada on the Wild Card Line. Hi, Sharon. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you. As I was listening to your guest speak about different experiences she's had, and I remember it just reminded me of a particular incident, and I've never forgotten it, and I was quite young at the time, and I thought, oh, my life was going to end, and I was just crying and crying nonstop because of the boyfriend I had at the time, and we had broken up, and I had never felt such anguish, shall we say, and I'd never been so upset before, and I'm bawling away, and honestly, just out of the blue, this is what stopped me from crying so deeply. I'm on my bed, and I'm crying away, and I felt what kind of stopped me in my tracks was a feeling of two arms surrounding me around my shoulders for a second or two. I don't know how long, but when that happened, I literally stopped, and I'd never experienced such, comfort or just peace or love. I don't know how to explain it, but it was wonderful. And I'm not saying that, you know, this stuff happens to me on a regular basis, but I always remember that. That was.
Did you feel it was an angel or a spirit guide, or who did you feel it might be?
It was just, I can't really, no particular image came to mind, but it was the feeling. I'm sorry if it's Mary or Marion.
It's Marion. Marion. You just felt wonderfully comforted, did you?
Oh, my gosh. I mean, I'd never felt, it was, I actually felt, because it was just a very warm feeling, and a very loving feeling. Warm is the way I would describe it. And it was very peaceful. It was almost like comforting. And perhaps it's, obviously that's what I needed at the time, but I had never had that experience where it just stopped me, where I just, I literally stopped and felt, reassured or safe. And some of the stories you've been sharing with us kind of reminded me of such a giving moment.
I've heard those types of stories, but not in that situation. Usually when someone dies,
yes.
As the loved one passes on to the next life, they often give the grieving people an amazing hug. You seem to have had something similar, but in different circumstances. So that's interesting. That's the first time I've heard of that happening outside of a death situation. But in a way, a broken romance is a death, isn't it?
Yes, thank you for listening.
Sharon, wait a second. Now, you said that it hasn't happened to you before, but you think about it now and then. Do you get comfort at times when you need it just from recalling the experience?
Not like that. Not like that. I think probably what brought this memory to mind was your guest's stories about people being how becoming safer or feeling better. And so why I called is that particular moment, because obviously there's other moments where people are in distress, but not like that. I think it was just it was something that was very giving. And I may have experienced other moments like that, but not quite the same. And I just wanted to share that.
That's
Thank
lovely.
You.
We're never really alone, are we?
That's right.
Well, that's a comforting thought. Thanks, Sharon, for that call. Marion, I guess you say most of those kinds of experiences or stories you hear happen in association with death, but I'd be curious whether you, of some of the most dramatic cases that you've heard, we have pretty full phone lines here. I don't mean to monopolize your entire evening, but can you stick around a little while longer?
It'd be my pleasure.
All right. Alan Jackson and Jimmy Buffett taking us into the break here. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Marion K. Williams, co-author of It's a Metaphysical World. We're hearing some really interesting stories from our listeners. Marion has agreed to stay to the top of the hour, and we're going back to the phones to get to as many of your questions and calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George Knapp in for George Norrie, talking with Marion K. Williams, co-author of the book It's a Metaphysical World. Marion, thanks for sticking around longer than planned. We're going back to the phone lines. Jason in Florida. Good morning, Jason. Hi, Jason. Are you there?
I am here. How are you?
What's on your mind?
I've got a question for Marion. I'm a first-time caller, pretty new listener to some of them out there. But my question is, Marion, reference to hypnotist and hypnosis, I feel as if I'm pretty connected with my body and my mind, and been recently considering going to a hypnotist to be, you know, more empowering, to kind of see if I can be better, more organized, more task-oriented, to, you know, get certain things in my life a little more, you know, on track. Have you had any experiences or spoke with anybody that have had bad experiences with hypnotists or sessions? And I'm not, I wouldn't say skeptical towards hypnosis, but I certainly wouldn't want to get put in a situation where
you could be taken advantage of or something like that.
Yeah. That or have a negative experience and then come out of it not necessarily possesses
well, an awful. Yeah. If it were me, I would be very careful who I handed control of my mind over to. Very, very, very careful. I think I would only, if I wanted to explore it further, I would see a psychiatrist, and they're trained in that. And you can trust that, you know, they're doctors. I'd be very cautious of going to anybody else. I've seen hypnotists in action, you know, on cruise ships and things, and it's a lot of fun, and everyone does very silly things. And apparently you can't be made to do anything you wouldn't normally do. But I've seen people do some pretty strange things, and so I'm not quite convinced about that. So if I were going to hand my mind to somebody, I'd want to know that they're, you know, they're doctors or trustworthy somehow. I don't think I'd just go to anybody. What do you think?
I would agree. I've done some research and I've looked into some of them in my particular area. It's just, you know, I believe the subconscious has a lot of, you know, personal power there. And I know it's a power of suggestion, and putting a lot of trust in that person to guide you in the direction that you would want to be guided in. But out of your experience, do you think it would be something worth doing? Or
I'll tell you what I do for myself. I'm a meditator. And you can meditate and take yourself down to a deep subconscious level, and you can give yourself a subconscious thought. Like, for example, before I came on the show tonight, I meditated and I told myself that I was going to be calm and cool because I have a tendency to panic a bit. And I didn't want to be panicking on the air, so I told myself I was going to be calm, cool, and collected. You can self-hypnotize in a way through meditation, and then you're in control. You're telling your mind what you want it to do. I'm very cautious of handing my power over me to anyone else, you know?
Yeah.
I appreciate the call, Jason, and I'll tell you, I've had some of the same sort of reservations. There's a hypnotic regression has been very successful in retrieving memories that are long forgotten or repressed for one reason or another. And there's a memory that I want to try to retrieve, but I'm a little cautious, concerned about it for the same reasons you mentioned. And I thought, well, if I were to go through this, I think I'd want to have somebody there, somebody in the room with me that I trust, who's sort of watching out for my best interests.
Yes, exactly. I have done a past life regression. That was interesting.
What'd you get out of it?
You are in control. They give you a suggestion about how to get there and you follow along, but you can opt out at any time. And it was just interesting to see a past life, to actually go through the door and look at it.
Question is, what kind of credence to give that? How much believability? Is it something that your mind makes up, or you take it as literal and real?
I couldn't prove that what I experienced was true. However, there was some research done out of Toronto, I think it was the University of Toronto, where they actually did past life regressions and then investigated the lives that some of the parties had talked about. And they were actually able to prove the existence of those people in rather extraordinary circumstances. So there have been past life regressions that have been proven to be true. And if you read Dr. Brian Weiss's research. Now, he's a very, very highly regarded psychiatrist with credentials out of Yale and Columbia. He can tell you some of the stories of the regressions he's led people through that are provable. There's wonderful research out there, but just be cautious who you go to and make sure that they're, you know, they're actually safe. It's actually a safe procedure for you.
Good advice. Thanks for the call, Jason. Bill in Bloomington, Illinois. Hi, Bill.
Well, hi, George and Marion. I tell you, I haven't told this for over 50 years, but see what you make out of the, I guess you would say, interpretation of this. When I was around 15 or 16, my bedroom was in a two-story building. And to tell you my background, it literally was, I was probably an evil teenager. Matter of fact, I know I was. Let's put it that way. But then again, I was still spiritual at the same time. Well, it was at night. There was a light, which happened to be at the foot of my bed. Across the room was my dresser. There was a bright light shining in my mirror in my eyes, and somehow it woke me up. I got out of bed, opened up the window, looked out, and we had a drive that was alongside of our house. And there was no cars or anything, and it was a clear night. And when I looked up, this angel came toward me, and it was all white. I mean, it was a big angel. I'm going to tell you right now, it was a big angel, not a gigantic angel, but it was larger than a human being. Let's put it this way. And its clothes was moving really slow. I mean, like there was wind, but there was no wind. But its clothes was moving. And it looked at me. I looked at it. It didn't say anything, but I could tell, like, it was a female angel for some reason. I sensed that. And it had a sense of urgency. I could feel it. And I went to grab it, I know, two or three times. And it backed up. And then I think it was the last time I grabbed it, I had it by the arm. It almost pulled me out of the window. But the point is, I don't know why I did this, but I kissed it on the cheek. And then it backed way out, and it had like I guess it was alarmed that what I had done. But then it came back slowly to me, and it had a sense of peace about it, you know? And here's the thing that really mystifies me. It had a book in its hand. I'll never forget this as long as I live. It had a book in its hand, and it had Roman numerals in gold. I'll never forget. And it was a brown book. It had Roman numerals, you know, the X's and V's and stuff like this, a long line. And it had a quill in its hand. It opened up its book. It seemed like it wrote something in it, closed the book. It didn't turn around. It backed up. And then it was about two or three days later, there was this other angel. I was laying in bed again, and this was before we ever knew the term hologram. But this angel was like, oh, it was terrifying. It was like you blew soot on it, on its face. You could see the indentations on its face and its clothes, and its clothes was moving really slow. And I looked at it, and I mean, it was like the room got cool, and then it was like it came toward me, but it was like it was prone, and then it disappeared. And I immediately at that point went to my mother. You know, she thought it was a death angel trying to lure me out of the window. But then I talked to several priests, and I think their definition was that the angels were basically fighting over my soul or giving me a choice, or I'm not exactly sure. And this thing has haunted me for a long time. I've told my kids this. But I tell you what, there are angels out there, and I would want your interpretation of what do you think was going on in this situation?
My guess would be that the priests were right and that you were being faced with a choice point, and you were being made aware that you could go this way or that way, and it was brought to your mind that you know, you better make up your mind which side you were coming down on, you know? That would be my guess, that it was
the
choice point.
The writing in the book part, it's like the book of Bill. They were taking notes in the Bill file there.
I don't know, but I tell you one thing. I don't know. I've heard it was the book of life. I mean, I don't know. I guess maybe I talked to this priest and said, well, since you committed yourself to the, you know, to the good angel, I guess you could say, it's like, well, okay, you made a choice, and then the other angel is like, I guess they were mad because I went to the other side or something like that, to the good side instead of the bad side.
Never came back, though, right?
Really interesting.
Yeah, never came back. No, I've never seen either one of them again, I mean, as far as that part. But I'll tell you one thing. I've never forgot it. It's been great in my mind. And if I could have progressive hypnosis, if I could get those numbers, whatever they were, and a lot of priests have asked me, what was those numbers? I can't remember the numbers, but I know there was a lot of Roman numerals across that book. I know that.
Yes, Marion, any other thoughts?
To know, wouldn't it? Because you can never actually forget something, so you should be able to retrieve that from your memory, you know?
I'm like George. I'd want somebody there because, I mean, that second angel just literally scared the death out of me. I'm going to tell you right now, it was spooky. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Yes. Bill, sounds like you made the right choice. Appreciate you telling the story and sharing it with us. Thanks for the call. Joe in Long Beach. Hi, Joe. How you doing?
How you doing?
Okay.
Yeah, hi, Miriam. How you doing?
Hi, I'm very well, thank you.
Yeah, is it Marianne or is it Miriam?
M-A-R-I-O-N, Marion.
Oh, Marion. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I have a little experience and a question to ask you. You know, I like to do certain paintings. I do paintings and stuff with like faux finishing.
Yes.
Which is very freestyle, faux finishing and multicolors and stuff. And anyway, I was on November 27th. It's the birthday of Jimi Hendrix. It was his birth. He was born on December 27th. And you know who he is, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, he was a fantastic guitar. He made it in England, where you come from.
No, I'm a New Zealander, but go on with your story.
Oh, okay. Anyway, I was doing some putting together some panels, and I was listening to his music. And this was on his birthday. He would have been, I don't know, 67, 68, something like that. And I was like, and I'm freestyling with this faux finish style with four different types of rollers and colors and everything. And I was listening to his music, and I was really into it. And then afterwards, like a few days later, when it all, with the paint all dried up, I looked at some of the panels that I put up against the wall to look at the different styles. And one of them shocked me. One of the panels shocked me because, there was a ghostly image. I have it. I took a picture of it, of Jimi Hendrix, on this panel with this style of freestyle of faux finishing, and it's a great ghostly image that is just incredible. And I was wondering, is it possible that it may be through the music that the ghost something came in and he get in there like that, something, you know?
I honestly don't know. That's an extraordinary story. I don't know. Maybe your subconscious did it. Like, that's also a possibility when you really have a strong connection. Your subconscious can do things like that and create the image. But I don't know. That's beyond my my experience completely.
But, Joe, you don't remember painting it yourself, though.
No, it's not a painting. No. I was... All right. Freestyle rolling and brushing, and then I went to dry it a few days later. I put them up against the wall, and I stood back to see the different, because I did many different combinations of colors and freestyle, and it's like three-dimensional, you know what I mean? It comes out on a three-dimensional level, and it was fantastic. I mean, I have it here as I'm talking to you, and I'm looking at it, and it's shocking me. It's like that image of his face just somehow, entered into it,
Hello? Why don't you email us the photo if you can, and maybe we'll put it on the website and people can take a look at it ourselves. Hendrix, we've had people on the show who knew Hendrix and worked with him. He was a very spiritual guy into some interesting esoteric topics. So that would kind of be a weird little birthday visit on his part.
Yeah, it would be a fantastic thing to see.
Joe, send us the photo. We'll see what we can do and give the other listeners a look at it later on. Thanks for sharing the story. Try to get one more quick call in for Marion, east of the Rockies, Jay in Miami. Hi, Jay.
Jay, hi. Good morning, madam. Good morning, Mr. Knapp, a longtime listener and a former skeptic. I was a police officer 20 years ago and experienced a dark NDE. And for 20 years, I've been having experiences on and off. And finally, I said to myself in meditation, Miriam, that if you will finally give me indisputable proof, I will continue assisting people who have drug problems and continue my studies. And a few days later, a large white robe figure walked right past me into my daughter's room, and it was the most incredible life-changing experience I ever had. The two questions I want to ask is, what it was a white figure, especially what Bill said a few calls ago, and it had a gold stripe on the side. It was very, very large, but very peaceful. Now, what was that gold stripe on the side for? Is it something as a guardian angel, or what was that?
I don't know. I don't know what that would be. But I do envy you that experience. That's fantastic. And it's interesting that it came in response to your request.
You know, it changed my life because I don't drink. I don't smoke. I do a lot of volunteer work. And I have a lot of skepticism inside me. And this vision completely changed all that. Now I'm doing more volunteer work. And I just wanted to tell you that it does exist. It's just amazing. It's amazing. Thank you, George. Thank you.
Jay, thanks for the call. Marion, is it the kind of thing that appears to people when they need to see it?
I think so. And I think when they remember to ask, that's the key. Like, I find when I ask for help, it always comes.
The book is called It's a Metaphysical World. Marion K. Williams, Elena J. Michaels, the co-authors, Extraordinary Stories from Everyday Life. I wonder, Marion, one other question before we go to the break, whether or not, since the book has come out, and I know it's relatively new, whether you're getting stories from around the world, people read it and want to share them, other experiences with you, whether it's enough to write some more about these kinds of things.
Well, we had to, when we were writing the stories, we had to put a halt to it because the book was getting too big. So it's only really half written, like we're in the middle of a sequel now because I've got more stories from the family, and so has Elena. And we don't have to go outside our circle. And the reason I don't include stories from other people is I don't know them, and I'm really, really hung up on telling the truth. And so I want to be able to vouch for the stories that I write. So although other stories are fascinating and I love to hear them, I can't put them in my book and say they're true unless I know they are.
Well, we appreciate that. We appreciate your scholarship in that regard. Really enjoying the book. I hope to finish it tomorrow. It's a Metaphysical World. Appreciate you spending time with us all the way from New Zealand and hope you'll come back on the program again.
I should correct that. I'm a dual citizen. I'm born in New Zealand, but I'm also a Canadian, and I live in Canada.
I see. Okay. Thank you very much for joining us and staying an extra hour or so. We'll be back with more of your calls on whatever you want to talk about. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM.